You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for January 10th, 2011. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, I'm Tom, and welcome to another Music Manumit. With me is Doug. Say hello, Doug.
Hello, world.
And we have a guest today. Why don't you introduce our guest today, Doug?
This is Mike, and is it Gilsingen?
Gilsonen.
Gilsonen. All right. So I could say a little bit about what you do, but I think it's probably you're probably going to do it more justice than I'm going to. So I guess what do you do?
Well, many things. I guess first off, I'm a classical guitarist. I am also a guitar teacher. I teach both privately and at a music school in New Jersey. It's called Trikey Music Center. And I also run a free music theory course on through Peer-to-Peer University. And I perform here in the New York area, New York, New Jersey. We do weddings sometimes and art shows and things like that. I work with different groups of guitarists. We do guitar ensemble things, anywhere from 2 to 5 guitarists. And also I'm part of NYC Duo, which is a performing guitar and flute duo. And that's, I think, all I do. Sometimes I practice. And
that's all you do? Yeah, because it didn't sound like much at all.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so you mentioned that you do guitar ensembles. Are any of these, named entities, or are they sort of, hey, let's get a group together to do a wedding type thing?
Yeah, they're more just informal groups that we put together. Usually we do it once or twice a year, and we usually pick some sort of, either it'll be at a, if we get a show to play it at, we'll work out something that way. But usually we do arrangements of, we've done Vivaldi trios that we've arranged for 5 guitars. Actually, we do just various different arrangements for guitar ensemble.
Well, and you said that you do a music theory course at Peer-to-Peer University. Now, for those of us who kind of know, and maybe some who are, this is the first time of them hearing about it, how would you explain Peer-to-Peer University, first of all?
Tough one. My explanation of Peer-to-Peer University is essentially it's an open group of people that get together, and basically I've heard it described as like study groups, but it depends really on the courses that it runs. It's basically everything. We use all open source material, from reading material, from the listening material, the programs that we use. It's a complete online class type. Yeah, they do everything from different tech courses and creative copyright classes to music theory, which is what I run, which is a little different than what a lot of the other music other peer-to-peer classes are. Music theory is actually go ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask you too. So on the music theory one, how it being online now, it's not a streaming class, and it's based around a website, the P2PU website.
And so I want to interrupt there, because that's that may be true for this particular course that it's not streaming, but some of the classes do stream.
See, that's what I wanted
just
to know.
Just to be clear.
I didn't know if they did or not.
Yeah, so the one that I took with John Brighton was a web development course, and we did, video chat for the course, for sure. So I don't know how often that's incorporated, but
we did the same exact thing. We have like a weekly meeting. See, with music theory, it was tough. Like I ran it twice, and the first time I ran it, I made lesson videos that I posted on the peer-to-peer website. And they're about an hour long, just like basically if you were to go to a college and take a music theory class, it was kind of like that. I would go over certain topics, and then I would post assignments on the site as well. And then we would meet once a week after everybody has seen the videos and done the work, and we'd go over everybody's assignments live through like a video chat. And that worked pretty well. The second time around was a little different. I used a lot of reading material from just from on the internet, from free sites that had music theory lessons, I guess you could say. Hmm. And yeah, so that's how we ran that. It's a little tricky doing music theory because I also needed to be able to write,
right,
and for everybody to see what I'm writing, because you can't just explain it. It just doesn't work that way. So it was it was tough. I had, like, you know, my little setup with a camera, like, hanging above my desk, and I had to actually write things because I tried to set up, like, a big blackboard, and that didn't work because, you know, because of the bandwidth, it's just, you can't read what you actually write.
Right.
Yeah, so it was streaming live.
Were you using a third-party service for this? I guess my question, or the one thing, the reason I keep asking this is because I tried to join, or I did join, mm-hmm, the same project that Doug did. And okay. I just got lost. I'd show up and I'd see a post from the teacher, and I didn't quite get what I was supposed to do, and I never knew that there was streaming video. And I guess I'm just asking, is it kind of improving in the way that it's showing, you know, interaction with, because I think I joined during the first, I guess you'd call, mm-hmm, them semesters. I think it was one of the first ones.
They call them rounds.
Rounds. There you go. And I joined that, and I'd go, and I'd be utterly confused, and I didn't know where it was coming from, you know. And are things still being done to just kind of, like, are you learning more as you go along and improving the site and, like, how to interact with people and what works and what doesn't? And
actually, yeah, it's improving. They have a new website that the one of the problems was the website was just utterly confusing and really bad. And they have a new website, a new platform that they're, I think, unveiling for the next round of classes. And they're trying to integrate all the different technology that they use, like the for instance, we use TalkBox for our video conferences.
Oh, nice.
I think they're trying to get away from that and actually have an internal, you know, everything through their actual site. Don't know if they have that just yet, but that's kind of, you know, down the road thinking.
Oh, I was just going to say, not to steer us too much down that track. I mean, I think it's good as long as you have questions, Tom, with what's going on, because I'm sure listeners will have questions as well. But I don't want to get too far afield of the music. But just a note on sort of the website stuff, they actually have an email list. It's a Google group called P2PU-Dev. Which is sort of the discussion for what they want to do. Mostly, I guess, about the website, but I think they also do some sort of course development type stuff on that. Are you on that list, Mike?
Yeah, the course development. I think they're actually. I should be. I'm on some list here for them. I think the course development. They're actually running a whole course for people. This next round on
They are
running courses, because everybody, you know, that's kind of the thing with it, is that every class can be different because it all depends on who's running that course and how creative they're going to get and, you know, and make it. My class was, I mean, you know, sometimes you get a whole range of people. You get, you know, young kids, and you get people, you know, in their 50s and 60s who, you know, this is like all new to them. And then you start sending them to TalkBox, and you send them to a wiki page, and it gets, you know. So, yeah, it can get a little confusing but hopefully that'll change. What I'm doing for my next round that I'm actually – I think the next round starts in January, but I'm going to be doing mine in the summer – is I'm actually going to be running my course live. Like, I'm going to have a space in New York City where I'll teach the class once a week and videotape it, and then post that video online for all the people who can't make it to the actual live course. And then, so it'll be kind of half online and then half live in the real world.
The courses actually begin January 26th, so hopefully that gives people plenty of time, you know, after this podcast comes out, to go and sign up for a course, or at least look and see if there's something they want to sign up with. And but the course list doesn't actually get posted until January 10th. So depending on when this comes out, you may actually be able to present a course still, if you are really passionate and really want to get things in quickly, but probably not. Probably you're just gonna have a couple days and wait till the 10th and, you know, take a class if you want. So
yeah, and the music theory though will be in the summer.
Right. Are there other music classes on there, like any music history courses or anything?
Not yet. I mean, we'd love to have more music type classes. You know, a music history would be one that would be, I mean, it'd be a great platform for that. We just haven't had anybody that really, you know, sign up to run the course. Right. That's basically what you need. You need somebody who's willing to, you know, sacrifice some of their time to teach a free class. And I mean, there's somebody out there, I'm sure, but not yet. So far, just music theory.
Yeah. And I mean, we've been sort of alluding to this, but just to clarify for people, that all the people that are running the courses are, you know, are volunteers. And I assume, and I've only taken the one class, but I assume most of them don't really have any experience. Now you're a little bit different in that regard, Mike, because you actually do teach guitar lessons, yeah. Which is obviously a little bit different than an online music theory course, but you still have some experience in teaching.
I'm trained from Manus College of Music, which is here in Manhattan. Though some people do have, I wouldn't say they're not experienced, because I feel like the copyright class maybe, I mean, some people, they're from the field. They may not have
you know,
certification
exactly.
to teach.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest that the people are just winging it. I know, I mean.
I think you were, Doug.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with Peer-to-Peer University? I mean, were you approached, or were you one of the people that helped start it, or how did you get involved?
I got involved in the second round, and I know John Britton, and I asked him, I was looking to set up a website for myself, and he said that he would, you know, set up my website if I taught a class. So in exchange for a website, I started my music theory class. And then, you know, the first round, I only had to do one round, but I enjoyed it. And I, you know, I love the process of kind of watching it grow. So I ran it the second round and now plan on doing it the third. So it was really by just word of mouth and asking somebody for a favor.
Yeah. And so, that's one story of how these classes got started. And, one of the other projects that P2PU is involved in is the Mozilla Drumbeat School of Webcraft. Do you know anything about that, Mike? Or you know?
Nope.
Okay. So I don't know too much about it either, except I know that P2PU was talking a lot about sort of accreditation and certifications, you know, people that go through courses, you know, to have something that they can tell an employer this, sure, or a prospective employer to say, hey, this is something I do. And so they teamed up with Mozilla. John Britton, who Mike mentioned, knows roughly through the inner tubes, the executive director of the Mozilla Foundation. It'll come to me in a minute. But anyway, I don't know how they ended up getting that all worked out, but it's sort of official in that sort of way. But I don't know much past that. If people are interested, it's drumbeat.org/webcraft. And so anyway, just as far as like, you know, putting sort of an official face on things at P2PU, that's the only one that I'm aware of. Do you know, were there any sorts of, I mean, I guess with the one class, there's probably not any sort of similar thing going on with music. But what about the arts more generally? Is there any sort of like curriculum developing around the arts?
There was somebody ran a creative writing course one round. Again, I don't know what's coming up this round. I mean, it's grown every, with each time that they've run courses, it's, you know, I think it's doubled each time. So, you know, what for this next round, I'd imagine there has to be something coming out. But yeah, there's the creative writing is the only one that I've seen that was kind of in the art world. I mean, you know, there's a lot of room for growth here. Like art history would be something, you know, that could easily be taught. But again, we just need to find somebody to do it.
By the way, Doug, Gary Kovacs was the name you were thinking of before for Mozilla. Sorry.
No, that's not right. That's not the
CEO
guy.
CEO of Mozilla.
No. Executive director, not the CEO.
Oh,
now
you're
and that's
splitting
the CEO.
Hairs.
That's the CEO of Mozilla, not the Mozilla Foundation, which is just confusing. But
knowledge
yeah.
smackdown right there.
I'm friends with him on Identica. I just can't think of his name.
Well, you're obviously not very good friends.
No, we're not, sadly.
So anyway. As far as the music theory stuff goes, do you have set music that you use? Okay, I don't have much of a music theory background. I know of music, and I know that there is a thing called music theory.
Yes,
but
it exists.
When you do it, are there materials that you base it off of, like examples that you use? And if so, are you know the examples? Do you use public domain or Creative Commons ones, or is there any particular rhyme or reason to the examples of the music theory that you would
yeah.
teach?
Yeah, well, before we even let's see, the Petrucci Music Library is one place where they have all of the public domain scores. They have something like 80,000 different scores there. And they also have recordings there, too, that we use for people to listen to. But so I get a lot from there. I use a lot. You know, I can only use things that are in the public domain, you know, well, legally. So so we use Bach chorales for some of the chord writing, things like that. Early on, with the very basic theory, you know, when you're just talking about, you know, what a scale is and how to write a scale, a lot of the examples I'll just write my own examples for people to use. And that kind of thing, we use MuseScore, which is a free notation program.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, so I'll...
Wait, what was that?
MuseScore.
Okay, we just talked about that, like... A week, like last week or something.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's not a bad program. I mean, you know, for free, it allows you to write anything and then, you know, turn it into a file and then turn that in. And the nice thing about that is then I could correct things and then post it back. And you could also listen to the things that you type in, as opposed to writing something on a piece of paper. And, you know, some people, they can't play what they write because, you know, I had a percussionist one round and, you know, so she couldn't necessarily play all the things that she was writing. Yeah, so we use any kind of the Petrucci Music Library is where I get a lot of my stuff from for the actual scores of music that we analyze because we do chord analysis. And so that's, you know, that's a great source right there. And musictheory.net is another one that has they have actual lessons that are pretty, they're nicely put together, as well as like different like trainers to help people with, you know, recognizing notes. You know, it'll have like a staff there and it'll put notes on there and it allows people to just like every time it sees a note, you could say, okay, A, and then it just keeps randomly giving you notes.
Hmm.
They have different ear training things where they'll play intervals and it allows you to... you know, they'll play a major third and you have to guess what it is and things like that. And that's another free site as well. That
I had never seen the site before. And I mean, it's obviously something that, I mean, they got musictheory.net. That's fantastic.
Yes.
You'd think it would be taken.
And, yeah. And it's, I mean, it's a great site. The problem with it is that, you know, it has lessons and it goes through all the examples and everything, but then people, you know, they read the lesson and then they have questions and there's nowhere to, you know, there's nobody there to answer your questions. And mm-hmm. that's kind of where we come in. It's, you know, because all the information is out there, but, you know, everybody has, they need to hear it. Some people just need to be told it or have it put a different way. And that's kind of what my class really is. It's or what it's turned into is just answering a lot of questions, trying to, you know, break some of the confusion that people have when, because it's a lot of information to absorb all at once.
Yeah, no, but it's, I didn't realize there was that much stuff out there for music theory. That's kind of cool. I really like that.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some music theory books, but it's, I mean, it's still growing. Well, because, you know, there's...
Well, it's just like with anything that you see online, and that's why I like the whole concept of this, is just that it's one thing to read a book, but it's another thing to just really get in there and start doing it. And like having, like you said, someone to interact with really does make a huge difference, rather than just, you know, like the musictheory.net site. While we were talking, I just did a couple of the lessons, like one of the easier ones. And I was like, oh, that's fun. But it doesn't give you anywhere to start from. It kind of just jumps in and it goes, start naming these notes, you know, is one of the lessons. And it's like, well, if you have no idea what the notes are, this don't, you know, well, I guess hit or miss, you'll eventually learn what it is. But still, it's got to be nice to have, you know, the direction that someone leads you in. Or just having a teacher, essentially, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, having an assignment and, you know, a due date. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that, you know, a little motivation.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, while we're talking about resources, sort of two things that are related. One, being whether or not you have looked at any of the MIT open courseware stuff. And I don't know, you know, if that's just like science and technology stuff that's open. So you might be able to tell us a little bit that. And also I wondered if you went back and listened to the interview that we did with my dad, who's a music theory professor, and if you did, whether you had any things from that really stood out to you as either being sort of not the way you see the world or being like very much the way you see the world.
Well, as far as the MIT courses, I've seen some of them. I don't believe that they had a music theory class, but I mean, they may as of now. I mean, it's some of their classes are, I mean, that's kind of, that quality is kind of what I'd like to get to, you know, because, I mean, you know, it's different when it's an actual class that's being recorded and you have the interaction there with actual students, which is what I'm trying, what I'm striving for this next round, is which is why I want to do it in, you know, in an actual location, as opposed to trying to rig something, you know, in my own home or in my studio. So... yeah, I've seen that. Now, again, that's the same thing though. They have courses, but there isn't somebody, you don't necessarily have access to, you know, somebody to answer your questions, which, you know, again, is what I think is needed with these classes. Is
right.
That you need that person at the other end. I mean, it's like tech support, you know.
But I was thinking, you know, you as the person on the other end, you know, whether or not people were using it, but it doesn't sound like that they, I know that they were mandated to sort of do this, but I don't know if they had a deadline or, you know, what's open. I don't even, though I assume they have like arts courses, I don't even know that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I would like, see, my kind of goal is to get my class, have a set of these classes already online, and then somebody else can take over the course and, you know, make their own lesson videos and be the person to answer questions and things like that. Because I can't do this forever. So I want, like, you know, to kind of just get it started and then hand it over to somebody else who, you know, with the knowledge to answer people's questions. Okay, it looks like they have, the MIT has music technology. Yeah, music history and composing. No theory yet, though.
Yeah. One day, you should write them and get them involved with P2P. Maybe they'll put your stuff up on the MIT website.
Yeah. Do they do that?
No, I don't think so. Unless they were to give you like an adjunct faculty position or something.
Yeah. That's a long shot.
Pro bono adjunct faculty.
Yeah, it'd be nice for my resume.
Well, so if, like you were saying, you'd like to do this and then kind of see if somebody could run with it, or I'm assuming even build off of it, probably. How yeah. would someone get involved with Peer-to-Peer University to do such a thing as an instructor or you know, in any fashion, I guess?
I mean, anybody can run a course. I mean, somebody can come along and run a music theory course if they wanted to. If
you
they
could
wanted
have a competitor?
You guys
have a contest.
It's possible. I mean, you know, if enough people sign up, sure, why not? I mean, I wouldn't think of it as a competitor. I mean, it's, you know, it's just another course. It's just like any other school where, you know, you have more than one teacher and more than of the same course.
Mm. Yeah, but
you know,
it's the
if
internet.
Somebody wanted,
so you could do things like Foursquare and you could get to see which class gets the most badges or something, you know, something like
yes.
that. That might be kind of fun.
Yeah. And if somebody wanted to actually take over my course, I mean, they would have to contact me. I mean, that's, I tried the last round because there was a few people who were thinking of, you know, teaching music. And so I was encouraging them to, you know, get involved with when people hand in assignments, you know, you can go if, you know, if you have the knowledge and you read their assignment and you see things that are wrong, you know, help them and, you know, kind of just trying to push them into that role. Didn't quite work so well. You know, again, just if I'd like to have at least like a solid foundation because it's brand new, it's a lot of work just to even get it started. So I want to have at least the basics, like 6 or 7 basic lessons up there, basic classes. That's what I'm doing this next round. That's why. So I'll have six to seven full courses that are there online that somebody can either who takes it over can either use those courses or those videos that I have, or they could make their own this way. So it's, you know, it's a little less of a transition into actually running the course. But if somebody was interested, the email that I have set up for them through peer-to-peer is musictheoryp2pu. At gmail.com.
So it basically just contacting someone really is just, I mean, that's how open the university is that it just contact anyone about anything and you could probably just get involved is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's really no, very little barriers. If, you know, if you have the ambition and want to do it, there's not really much stopping you.
That's pretty cool.
For those people that are familiar with, you know, open source free software, I think that they're pretty much set up exactly like, you know, your favorite open source program is as far as contributors are concerned.
Hey, and speaking of that, what drew you to Creative Commons and free software and other such things like that?
Well, it kind of found me. I mean, I knew of some of like the musictheory.net, just things that I've used in the past for myself and with some of my students. This kind of all just, you know, it kind of fell on my lap when I said, yes, I would run a course. Then all of a sudden I had to start hunting out some of these things. Though, I mean, the Petrucci, the music library that has the free scores, that I knew of through college. Because they have, you know, when you go to a university, they have access to a lot of things that you don't have as just a regular person. So that's, you know, I mean, that's kind of the short story.
I wanted to mention once too, is we've been on the Petrucci website before. And I remember one of the things that we were really fascinated with was the timelines. And we actually tried to go back to see, because they have one that's like, you know, from, you know, 0 AD to after that or something. And we were looking at that. And there's something that I want to say, like, they have knowledge of that was written from, like, I don't know, like 200 AD or something. I don't know why. I was just clicking around on the site, and I remembered that, and I just wanted to bring it up. Not sure why. Anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, really written music, I mean, there may even be some music from the Greek period. I'm trying to see if I can find that right now. Oh no, yeah, it looks like they're starting at 0. And that's going to be all choral music. Yeah, there's got to be some fragments of Greek music though someplace.
Right. Oh, and by the way, speaking of this as well, did you guys know that yesterday was National, what is it, Public Domain Day?
I did not.
Yeah,
I
didn't know this either. I saw a post for it, and apparently it's because the new year rolls around and a bunch of new things enter the public domain on January 1st every year. So it's considered National Public Domain Day. Just a little bit, tidbit of knowledge for you.
So it's based upon not publication dates, but actual year. That's interesting.
I think so. Yeah, I think that the public domain licenses, are based on year, not date.
So you talked a little bit about, obviously, the scores. We were just talking about that. But what about the recorded music? Because a lot of those arrangements are not in the public domain, if you're talking about Bach or Mozart or whatever. Were you able to get things that were in the public domain? Did you end up actually using Creative Commons stuff, or was it just completely public domain stuff?
Yeah, it's tricky. There are recordings or links to recordings through the Petrucci Music Library. But it was actually tough to find material. Naxos has like an entire database of music that, I was trying to get access to their music, but they charge it's a subscription thing. But I know they have deals that to universities. I wasn't able to get anywhere with that. So I was using things on YouTube, but again, I probably wasn't even supposed to be doing that.
It's there. So, that's on Google, right?
you're right. You don't have the arrangements, you don't have rights to, or even the recordings.
Well, on YouTube, you can get the karaoke version, probably.
Oh, there's some high-quality karaoke.
So maybe that's a way for people to get involved, if they have a score, maybe just recording something and putting it out there under Creative Commons would be helpful. Is there some sort of repository that would be a good place for people to do that, or is it just – would that sort of stuff just kind of get lost in the Creative Commons shuffle? I mean, it would certainly get lost if they just like put it on Jamendo or something. I guess Free Music Archive, somebody could be a curator or something like that.
I wonder if you can just upload your own arrangements onto Petrucci.
That's what I was just wondering.
Yes. A virtual library containing all public domain musical scores, as well as scores from composers who are willing to share their music with the world without charge. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean arrangements, but I feel like arrangements would fall into that category too. Yeah. So that's certainly one way to do it. What I was doing too was I would just make my own arrangements, and since I have the scores, and then just put them into MuseScore and then give them out that way.
I mentioned the Free Music Archive. Are you familiar with them? They hail from your hood, or at least Jason and WFMU do. But WFMU people run the Free Music Archive, and they've got classical, quote unquote, classical stuff under there, and a bunch of different things. But I don't know if any of that would be useful for a course in the future.
Oh, certainly. Actually, I'm looking through it right now. There's some things on here that would be. I actually didn't know of this. I know of WFMU, but I didn't know about catalog they have here.
Yeah, it's fairly new. I think it's only been around about a year now. And it's been getting larger and larger, but I think it's just I think they just wanted a place to keep all the music that they play on WFMU, and have a place for people to submit music so they can keep finding stuff. I mean, genius idea if you ask my opinion. But I'm just really I've always been kind of amazed at like how adamant they are with it, and the fact that it really is like all over the board as far as what type of genre you're looking for. They even do a lot of old time and classical, and which is the link I'm assuming Doug just sent you.
I didn't send it to him.
Oh, you didn't?
I thought you did. He found it on his own.
I found it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't use the internet.
I just wasn't sure because I know that over Skype, you know, just sending links back and forth, going, "Hey, check, here's a page."
And what about the archive.org as well? Are there resources there to be used, or is that, have you not found good things there? Or I'm just asking these because these are things that Tom and I use a lot to look up music, and I'm wondering if, you know, things are too contemporary necessarily, or too popular music to sort of be good for a music theory course.
I mean contemporary music would be great for a music theory course because, I mean, that's part of the challenge, is that, you know, you're relying on music that's sometimes, you know, has no significance to people's, you know, actual lives. You know, some people don't want to learn, you know, Bach chorales. So it helps to have something that you can throw in there that's relevant to what people are actually using in their everyday life. Archive.org. I'm checking that out now.
Yeah, they actually have like a whole, what they call, well, they changed it, I think, to like community audio. It's just like a, I guess they, if you look over in the search, they've got the arts and music. I think Tom actually uses this more than I do.
Yeah.
What are they calling it? I know that it used to be called open source music,
right,
which was,
yeah,
oh yeah.
And now it's community audio.
Community audio.
Basically, you used to be able to choose where you would want your audio to go, or your, because there's also another section too called texts, which has paper. You know, you can scan paper and put it up there, and you can upload compositions and search for them that way. Like there's the Robarts Library from the University of Toronto that has compositions available in there. Now the whole concept is that you can host all this stuff there. You can even link to it from other places, but you can't upload it without opening it to the community if you want to use it. It has to be put under some sort of Creative Commons license or public domain.
Where public domain applies.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess archive.org is in the U.S., so it would apply.
That's true, it is. Yeah, so this might be another place where you could find compositions, and you can upload a PDF, or you can, and that's the cool thing, too, is when you upload it, this is another thing, whereas you spoke of MuseCore before, you can upload the text online as a PDF, and it will create, what is it called, not derivatives, but different versions of it by itself using open source and things in the background, like if it's PDF-based, it'll also create an EPUB, a Kindle version, a DAISY version, a full document.
Oh, that's sweet. I knew it did that for the music.
Yeah,
but
for music,
for
it'll translate it. If you upload a WAV, it'll also automatically create an MP3 and an AUG file for you, so that way that it has different formats to use. So did we just turn you on to something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this has been a great addition to my class now.
Cool.
Yeah, because I mean, you spend all your time practicing and, you know, reading music, and this, you know, they don't teach you about this type of thing in school. You know, they don't really, you know, they don't use this stuff because they have access to copyrighted material. So
mm-hmm, yeah, I think it's amazing. I mean, Tom and I have been doing this show for, you know, 6 months now.
Yeah, I think so.
And we learn things every time, and I think the people that we interview learn stuff. There's just so much stuff out there. I mean, it's the internet, for God's sake. I mean, it's just, you know, like a compendium of knowledge.
Wow, you and the $10 words there, huh?
Yeah, I don't know where.
Compendium,
I don't know where that
knowledge
came from. But yeah,
it sounds like
there's that Wikipedia quote unquote competitor called Citizendium or something. I think that's why I know the word. But anyway,
compendium of knowledge just sounds like some sort of Metallica song.
I don't know why. No, it sounds more like a Dream Theater song.
Oh, maybe.
Yes. It's very prog.
Yeah. So we talked about WFMU, and we mentioned John, who I don't think we mentioned that he's involved with Open Everything. But John Britton, they're, you know, both in New York. What what other sorts of things? I mean, do you feel like there's, you know, Creative Commons is strong in New York, or is it very much, you know, the seedy underbelly of the music scene in New York?
Yeah, it's that I don't know that I could really answer that because, you know, again, this is all kind of it's new to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that I even know about it, I suppose, is a good sign. But, you know, as far as like, you know, mainstream, like in universities and things like that, it's not really like the only thing I ever hear around like the colleges is like, you know, the MIT classes and, you know, and then that's it. There's, I mean, John would be the one to talk about this because sure there's a giant world of it out there that I just don't know about.
Well, it's interesting that you about saying that there's a giant world because almost everybody that we talk to is kind of like, not really. But except our last interview with Mike Nutt, he was the first person that was like, yeah, it's pretty strong around here. But, you know, when we've done interviews with Germans and Englishmen and Italians and, of course, people in the U.S., they're all sort of like, well, not so much. So I don't know. I mean, I think there probably is a world of stuff up there, but I think it's just sort of spread – you know, for the most part, sort of spread globally, which I think is interesting. And this is one of the reason that I keep asking this question in interviews is because you always think of like the scenes of the past, you know, like the CBGB's scene and or the, you know, the DC hardcore scene or there's all these like scenes. Then the internet is changing that. But I still feel like there's this sort of cultural instinct. There's this cultural history of you know, regional music, whether that be sort of popular music or folk music, that I don't think we're losing that. I just don't know that it's that Creative Commons has sort of become a real part of that yet. I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, it seems like it's growing and it's, you know, it's still kind of an infant, or it's just, you know, it's hard to really tell, you know, right now what the, you know, the new thing is right now, you know, cause I mean, I'm always hearing of new projects and things like that, that have to deal with open source kind of material, but it's, you know, I get it in small bite-sized pieces.
Yeah. I think
which makes me, I was just gonna say, that's why I feel like there's this whole world out there that I just don't know about.
Yeah, I just think that it's definitely become more accepted in like the software community rather than now it's definitely in its infancy in the music community. But I think with the way that net labels are popping up and they're becoming like the new MP3 blogs and everybody can really, you know, get involved personally instead of them being more and more like the, you know, the big artists, now the small artists being the ones that are becoming the big artist because of this, I think that really helps, is kind of help promoting it farther.
Yeah. I mean, the whole music industry needs to reevaluate its size, you know, and that's probably the thing. It's just slow to change. I mean, yeah, with programming, it's one thing, but with, you know, these are like large companies that have, you know, had a solid grip on everything for the past, you know, 50, 60 years. So, you know, now for just like, you know, a small artist to be able to, I don't know, it's just changing. That's all.
Yeah. And the way that people are learning, to go back to the peer-to-peer university thing. Huh?
Sure. I hope they're learning.
Yeah. So what's, I'm going to say it.
Oh. Go for it.
So what advice would you have for people wanting to release Creative Commons music in order to make money? Or just to put it out there, or, you know, what kind of advice would you give to, say, you have a student that would want to ask, you know?
And I actually wanted to sort of rephrase that a little bit, because I think what you're doing is what in the software or in the technology world would be called a service.
Very true.
Sort of the business model for, you know, a lot of open source companies is, the code is free, but you pay us to help you, to be that person on the other end of the line. And so we've never really talked about this with anybody before, but do you see that as a more viable option to sort of be a services provider like Jimendo? I guess we should ask, are you familiar with Jimendo.com?
No.
There's a lot of Creative Commons stuff there. I mean, like hundreds of thousands of tracks there. So you should check that out too. But basically they do streaming music for, they're trying to be ASCAP with Creative Commons music, sort of. That's an incredibly gross generalization, but you can think of it that way. So do you think that's a good way to make money, or do you think that it is sort of a viable business market for people to go on tour? I mean, you're teaching lessons, and you're also doing sort of performances at weddings and such like that, but that's sort of a different culture than, you know, the pack up your guitar and go on the road sort of thing. So are both of those viable? Is one of them viable and maybe not the other? Or
I think it comes down to, you know, flexibility. You know, you have to be able to make little bits of money in lots of places. Yeah, you can go, there's touring, there's selling your music, and there's giving lessons and things like that. But none of them are likely to make you a lot of money. So you have to be, you know, flexible, you know, like just not banking on being a touring band, because that probably all the bands that I know of that have like toured, it doesn't seem like they necessarily make lots of money from it. In fact, they probably spend more money than they make.
Or they break up. That can happen sometimes too.
So do you record at all, or do you just play live?
No, I do some recording. A lot of my recordings now are just from live performances.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you're saying like, you know, what people should do as far as, you know, getting their music out there. And I think that's the most important thing, is to just go out and play. Forget about selling it. And, you know, I mean, if buying CDs is a thing of the past, you know, actual live performances is another, you know, sick animal. You know, there's, you know, places, all the live, a lot of the live venues, even here in New York, they closed. And, you know, it's, you know, it's important to get in the real world and play for people. Yeah, recording, you know, I've just been recording like live performances. That's kind of, it's a good chance. It's a good, you know, I get a performance and then just to record it and not have to worry about going into a studio, and then I just have somebody master it. And so long as it's a good performance, I could use it.
That's true.
So
it's
where,
like, your
where
technic-
can people?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's true. It's like you're getting a free engineer for the night, and then you just have somebody master it. That never even occurred to me.
Yeah.
Because yeah, you have the sound guy back there setting it up for you, and you have him record it, and he has to dial the knobs and everything, and he's not allowed to leave till you're done.
And you just have to be able to do it on the first take.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, you could always go ahead and play the same song over and over again, like do, like the Blues Brothers when they did that Western bar, and they just played
Rawhide. You could do it without people noticing it. It could be like the, you know, it could be a jam or something, and then you just cut it up when you get it back. And yeah, that's totally, we did that live. That was great, wasn't it? So I think I found someone with your same name, a track on eMusic. Is that
eMusic?
You?
I haven't been there
same
in forever.
Etude One.
Etude One. Yeah. That's one of mine.
It's a single.
And I also have things on SoundCloud as well.
Ah, nice.
It'd be SoundCloud -Mike-Gilson. I have some Vivaldi arrangements up there.
Yeah, I forgot all about eMusic. I haven't used that in forever. We were just talking last week about Magnitune too, and I was like, "Oh yeah, Magnitune. That's still around, isn't it?" It's weird.
And that must be up there from. I put a track on CD Baby, and I think they put it.
That's what it's there from.
Gotcha.
Because I'm like, eMusic. I don't know what that is, but I don't think there's anybody with the same name as me out there either. So.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, "Well, is this guy? I don't know if it's you or not." But So I'm looking at your SoundCloud here. So do you have these licensed in any particular way, or are they just sort of the SoundCloud default?
Yeah, you know, I they're not licensed. I'm not really too concerned with it. I mean, if somebody takes it and they, you know, they can have it, I don't really care.
You should tell them that though.
Yeah, I've been told. I've been told that by some of the open source gurus. That,
yeah, you're being a bad Creative Commons advocate right there.
Yeah, but I don't know that I necessarily want people changing what I do. So if they take it, I won't really care.
Can use a not non-derivatives license.
Then they can't
change it. You should make one of them like a non-commercial or something, and then we can play it on our show. But we don't play stuff that's not remixable though.
Yeah. I don't know because I don't own the arrangement of that. I own the performance of it. So
see, now you're being a smart Creative Commons advocate. Right there. Now you're like thinking back to the you don't own the arrangement. That's interesting. I wouldn't even have thought of that. I would have thought you performed it and there you go, but you're actually being very smart and what's the word? Legal?
Yeah.
Trying.
I don't think that's the word I was looking for, but that's what came out. Legal.
I think that's a good word. What he's doing is legal.
That's true.
Not illegal?
Yes. What are some of your favorite bands and artists? Not Creative Commons ones necessarily, just in general.
Well, let's see. I'm really getting into Astor Piazzolla. I kind of fall in love with the pieces that I learned to play. So Piazzolla is a Argentinian composer from, the 1900s. Kind of started did a lot of tango music. And he has some things written for guitar, the history of the tango, which is a lot of fun. And it's basically like he wrote these five songs that are basically, go through the history of the tango. Like the first song is the tango as you would have heard it in 1900. It's, Bordel 1900. And then the second one is the tango as it evolved in the 1930s, where it's more lounge cafe music. And then it evolves in the 60s to, more different cultural influences start to come into the tango. And then it ends with a piece where it's like, it's no longer made to be danced to. It's music, for the concert hall to be listened to.
Which version of those is the rose in the mouth dancing with the woman version? Like the stereotypical one you see on TV?
Yeah, that would probably be the first one, the Bordel 1900.
Really? See, I would have thought it would have been romanticized more in the 60s rather than the original.
The original is it's strictly for dancing. The 60s, it got more complex in its rhythms, and it got a little more experimental. There's aspects of it that would fit that model, but just the dancer would be the first one.
That's interesting. I like me some tango.
Yeah, it's fun, and it's very challenging too.
Yeah, and I guess I never realized that there were different movements of it. But I mean, like with any music, of course there was. Just I guess in classically deemed music, you don't think of the fact that it does grow and grow. I mean, essentially, jazz became blues, or blues. Wait, which was the order? It was like jazz became blues, which became rock and roll, which, rock and roll is now like there are 10 million genres of that going on. So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And there's, it's hard because they don't fall into a good box or a nice genre. Like there's contemporary composers. Chinnery Ong is one that I've been listening to lately. He has, and these are like, it's Western music, combined with, I think he's from Cambodia, with, Cambodian folk music kind of thrown all together. There's lots of mini little movements that, it's just not very, it's not mainstream, it's not popular, it's not pop music. So it tends to have a very small following.
Can you spell the last names of those two people you mentioned for me?
Piazzolla was PIAZZOLLA. And actually, his first name was Astor, Astor.
And what was the other one was
Chinnery Ung, Chinnary. And his last name is UNG.
UNG, interesting.
Oh, yeah. I would have thought why.
Yeah, so did I. So are you into popular music, or are you hanging out in the wine clubs? And
Yeah, hang out with, everyone's over 70. I'm into pop music. I'm a classical musician, so I spend a lot of time soaked in that kind of world. Uh-huh. And especially, to perform these things, it takes a lot of time and a lot of, when I want to just like forget about it and like not think about it and just like move to something totally different. I like a lot of the things from when I was like a little kid, like the Chili Peppers and things like that. You know, modern music, modern like pop music, I just,
it's all terrible.
I had a brief period in the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, where I stopped listening to music for like the longest time. I would just like, and the funny thing was, is I was a pizza driver, a pizza delivery driver, so I started just listening to talk radio.
It was an NPR all day.
Yeah, so I would just do that instead because I was just so fed up with what music was doing. This was around the time of the Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys and all that stuff, and I was like, I'm done with it. I'm not. People are just putting stuff out, and then for a while it stopped, and now it's kind of happening again. But we have the internet, so I can go listen to whatever the heck I want, or I have my MP3 player now, or all that stuff. So now I'm back on the horse again, and I found ways to find new stuff. But I definitely know what you mean.
Or learn an instrument.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And during that time period, I did actually start teaching myself piano, and to a lesser extent, guitar. Basically enough where I could show my guitarist the chords that I made, and then he could play them fluidly.
So speaking of instruments, I just found the bandoneon. It looks like an accordion. Apparently,
the bandoneon.
Yeah, Mr. Astor played it. Apparently, it was kind of cool. But the main thing that I wanted to ask was if you played anything else, because I know a lot of musicians play multiple instruments.
I dabble in some other instruments, I guess. The piano, I was at the conservatory, they force you to take piano. You don't really have a choice. So even though, like, as a classical guitarist, you have to have, you have fingernails on one hand and the other hand, they're really short, so it makes playing the piano very weird. A lot of clicking and your hand slips off keys and things like that. But
you could have the clicking as part of your distinct piano style.
Yeah, prepared piano.
Yeah.
Get your hand crank back there.
Do you ever listen to New Sounds, the NPR show?
Yes.
Yeah, because they have stuff with prepared piano on that sometimes, and I'd never heard of it till I started listening to that show.
Yeah, there's some it's a great show. I mean, they have a lot of they do a lot of like contemporary ensemble type of things.
Right.
Yeah, prepared piano I think is from I think John Cage maybe was the guy who started that. Where they put nails and screws into the strings and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Piano, I play piano, and then like I could play around with bass guitars and anything that's similar to a guitar.
Yeah, that's I was thinking about that. Like my dad's a clarinetist, but he basically teaches anything that's single reed.
Yeah, bass guitar is fun because it's you only have to really play one string at a time, so it's a lot less than the guitar, and it's wider, and so it's easier to play. But it's important though when you play the other instruments that are similar, not to play it like a guitar.
Mm.
When I play the bass guitar, I try and play it like a bass guitar should be played, not a guitarist playing on a bass guitar.
And don't play a piano like a guitar.
That could be, now you want to talk about having a niche. You're getting in there and pulling all the strings.
You just have to make sure you have wicked, built up forearms and stuff so you can hold it on your side.
Uh-huh. And do windmills with my arms.
Malmsteen will play the guitar in his lap. So you could play it like that. I mean, not all the time, but you could do that with the piano, maybe.
Yeah. And Malmsteen is an interesting character.
Who's that one jazz guitarist, I forget his name, who has the stand where he just walks up to it and starts playing? I want to say it's Richard. Oh, I saw him on like Austin City Limits a few years back. Great. Well, this is an uneventful story right there. Anyway, he had one because he'd switch guitars, and then he had a 12-string electric guitar that would sit up there, and he would just walk up to it, and it would be tilted to the way he wanted, so he'd just reach his hands around and then just continue playing and then let go and then go. I always thought that – I was like, why have more people not done this? But then also he kind of looked sort of ridiculous when he did it. That might be another reason why nobody else does it. But I always thought that was really cool.
Was it Richard Thompson by any chance?
That's the one.
Yeah, the problem is that then you can't really move around. You're stuck in that one place. You can't even turn. Although I suppose you can drag the guitar around with its stand.
Or you could be like Courtney Love and just like throw it at people. And I guess that's more bike stands. But before we get too far into the realms of just shooting the shit, what are some people that you think that we should try to interview? I mean, are there people that you know doing interesting things in free culture and Creative Commons music that it'd be good for us to talk to?
Let's see, in music. You know, the only person I know that's doing any kind of like free music things. Have you interviewed John Britton before?
No, I've stayed at his apartment before, but I've never interviewed him such.
Did you just not speak to him when you were there?
Well, I didn't take a pen and a pad of paper and write down things. I did speak to him though. Although he had just gotten back from India, and so he was pretty wiped out. And it was last March. And you may remember, Mike, that you guys got some pretty nasty storms last March, with just absolute torrential downpours and terrible wind. And we didn't really leave the apartment except I had to go do a little talk thing. And that was the only time that I did. But I was so soaked when I got back from that.
He's doing something with like a GPS tracker and open music as like you walk down blocks in like the city, like certain music plays with each block and, which is kind of interesting. It's definitely not like a sea of people that I know of that are doing anything for free.
Yeah. No.
Everybody wants to be paid.
Well, Tom, did you have any other questions?
No, other than just, well, first of all, is there anything you would like to promote, I guess, since we got you on here, give you the floor and, anything you'd like to direct people to that have been listening?
Sure. Well, for my theory class that's going to be running over the summer, I'm taking, applications submissions right now for people who want to sign up for the course. They could email musictheoryp2pu@gmail.com and just put the subject like summer theory NYC. Based on how many people sign up and where they're located is going to depend on where the classes run. I have some options in Greenpoint, Prospect Park, the Upper West Side, and the Bronx. And so, people could start signing up now. I have for my nycduo.com for any kind of anyone needing to hire guitarists, string quartets, anything for, weddings, gallery openings, social events. NYCduo would be the place to go for that. I think that's the only promotion I need to be doing.
Well, that's great. Well, I want to.
I have one.
Oh, you have a question.
One more thing for listeners. That if the music theory thing is really interesting and you're sort of a new listener to us, back in on August 21st, we had a show entitled Bonofide. Bonofied. So you can check that out. And we had like a 2-hour interview with my dad. And so a very different take on things, which I think, because, you know, he has the whole academia side. So I think this is really, really good. Sort of not really yin and yang, but just addition to our repertoire of podcast interviews. But yeah, I think it was awesome. I learned a lot, and it's always
yes, me too.
It always makes me happy, yeah, when we're able to when the interviewees learn something as well. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, and you're doing a great thing, and I want to thank you for coming on, Mike, and we really appreciate it. And, you know, okay, hopefully Peer-to-Peer University will continue to grow, get more people, and maybe I'll check out the music theory thing this summer. I'll have to sign up. But thank you again for coming on the show, and we'll see you all next time on another Music Manumit podcast. Thank you very much.